Welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, Laura Zaro Kopinski, librarian, writer, and all-around bookworm. My guest today is literary agent Amy Elizabeth Bishop, who has been with Distel, Godrich, and Barrett since 2015, and before that received a degree in creative writing from SUNY Geneseo. Today, I'm excited for her to share a window into the role of the agent in the publishing process. So I think this will be really interesting for readers and also for aspiring writers. So Amy, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm really excited to get to talk with you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on. This is super fun.
Yes. So we met at a conference for writers called Muse in the Marketplace, and I went to one of your sessions and found it so helpful. I think that listeners will feel that way as well. And so could you start just by telling us a little bit about your agency and what you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, yay, Muse. I love Muse.
I missed it so much this year.
I know. Yeah. Virtual is not quite the same, but I'm hopeful that 2021 or 2022, the winds will have changed a little bit.
Yes, I agree.
So my agency is Distel, Godrich, and Barrett, as you said, and we are founded by Jane Distel, who still runs the company in the early 90s. And we kind of do a little bit of everything. Every agent in our agency does a variety of genres, age groups. We all have dabbled in a ton of different categories, some of which perhaps we never thought we would do much of. I, for example, did not think I was going to do much nonfiction, and that is now a significant portion of my list. So that's been kind of one of the fun things about working with Jane and the team, is that you're really encouraged to go outside of your comfort zone and try new genres and really do what you feel passionate about. And there's 14 of us at the agency. Some of us have been there for over 20 years. Some have, I think the newest of us has been there for about a little under a year, but we're kind of all ranging from a year to 20 plus years at the agency, which is fantastic. And our role is sort of, my boss always says that we work for the author. And the editor works for the publisher. So our job when we take on writers is that we, they're kind of the boss. Like, we have the industry knowledge and expertise, and we can offer guidance and counsel and advice. But at the end of the day, it's the author's book, it's their baby, their work, and we work for them and we work in their best interests. And sometimes, of course, like, that might, what we think is in their best interest and what they think in their best interest might not always be the same, but we always hope it does. So we basically walk an author through the whole publishing process. We kind of hold their hand throughout the whole thing if they need it, and shepherd them and make sure that things are going smoothly, that relationships are going well between the editor and the author. And overall are just sort of facilitators, moderators. And we do a ton of different jobs. I mean, we wear an editing hat. We wear a little lawyer hat for the contracts. We are negotiators. We sort of do a little bit of everything. And that's why I loved agenting. And what brought me to it initially was just seeing the variety of everyday tasks that you do as an agent. No day is boring. Every day looks a little bit different. And it's sort of the spontaneity of it that I loved.
Yes, it sounds like such a fascinating job. And I know for me, I think I had imagined that it was more sort of the editor that's by a writer's side, like, throughout their career. But it seems like in a lot of cases, that's the agent, and like, editors might change as, as things change in publishing. But it's really, as you're saying, sort of the agent that's walking the writer through the process. You mentioned, as you were talking about your agency, sort of the different categories that you each kind of specialize in. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because I also thought, something I hadn't really thought about, that of course not every agent can specialize in everything. So you have to sort of pick and choose. But how does that all work at your agency?
Yeah, so of course it varies a little bit from agency to agency, where some agencies and agents specialize in a genre or a few genres, and that is like their wheelhouse and what they know best. And others are more, I would say, generalists. I think for me personally, it was, well, what am I interested in topics? What do I love to read? What do I think I have a good grasp on in terms of the market? And what do I think I can sell? And, where sort of the Venn diagram, where's the center of those for me? And I think that's often true for other agents. So, and for me, for example, with nonfiction, I didn't know much about nonfiction proposals, but I knew I liked history. I knew I liked current events. I knew I liked, you know, books to talk about feminist issues. And so I went looking for those kinds of projects. And then, you know, with the help of my other more senior colleagues, was able to get guidance on, you know, how to kind of shape those ideas and make them work, even though I didn't have nonfiction experience beforehand. And I think with fiction, it, you know, what are you drawn to? So, you know, I love, for example, reading science fiction, but I am not as well versed in it as other agents. So I'm not as familiar with the market of that as, say, I would be with like, literary fiction. And so I'm not always the best fit for science fiction, but I think the beauty of the job is that any, you know, you can take on passion projects. So something you love, like fall head over heels for, is not at all the genre you do. You can try it. Like in almost every circumstance, you can just give it a go. And we've all had stories about projects that like, we were like, well, we wouldn't do romance or we wouldn't do science fiction or we wouldn't do kids books. And then we find a project that we just absolutely adore in that genre or that age group, and we do it. And that's kind of always a pleasant surprise.
Well, it sounds like a book nerd's dream, and it makes me wonder, you know, I feel like it's probably a little bit like with working in a library where you probably have this romantic image of like, you just get to sit there and read all day, but I'm sure that's not the case. And you have probably lots that you have to bring home. And I guess just how do you fit in reading people's queries, reading manuscripts that are in progress, getting, you know, it just, I imagine it's just so time consuming.
Yeah. I mean, my boss said at some point, and I think she was joking, but I'm not positive, but I the more I do this job, the more I think she wasn't joking. But she said that agenting is not a career, it's a lifestyle, which is very true. You know, most of my reading happens at night, like after I shut my computer for the night around 6 and on the weekends. Very little of my actual reading gets done during the workday because I'm answering emails, talking to clients, talking to prospective clients, talking to editors, doing administrative work, helping my boss out with stuff. So my day, my 9 to 5, you know, or as it is, 8:30 to 6, is filled with other things that are not reading involved. And so I feel like most agents I know, even if they are just doing agenting and not any administrative work, a lot of their reading time happens after hours. It's the best chance to sort of get an unbroken span of time to yourself. And I think, you know, if you have kids, like you are probably fitting it in wherever you can. I don't have children, so I have the evenings and weekends to myself mostly still. So, but yeah, I mean, a lot of, I wish it was just sort of a sitting around all day and reading kind of job, but it is not.
Yeah. Well, it sounds a lot like librarian life. And I feel like it's the same kind of thing where you get into it because you love to read so much. So it probably doesn't feel like work. I feel like it's the same where, you know, you're not getting to read the things that you want to get for the library or a program you want to do or whatever during the day, but you love it so much that you, you know, do it at other times. So that's interesting.
Absolutely.
I was curious about that. Yeah, for agents. Well, you mentioned some of the categories that you do. Are there other fiction ones that you could tell us about that you're particularly interested in? And then kind of along with that, how do you sort of figure out, I know you kind of have to put together a list in some way. So how do you kind of like balance it all out and figure out who to take on? And
yeah, so I'll do the how I decide to take things on. It is kind of a subjective process, which I think people hear all the time and they're querying, and it's so frustrating. But it's true. I mean, I think for me, I have to really fall, especially with fiction, right? Like I have to really fall in love with a voice and characters. And I've said to a few authors recently, like, if I will follow your character anywhere, like I know it's going to be good. Sometimes with fiction, I have like a little tingle where I get into it and I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. And like, it's often the writing is just really beautiful. There's some kind of really compelling plot. The characters are just really well drawn. I care about them instantly. I would do anything for them. I am rooting for them to come through even if they're not the best kind of person. And I think for me, and every agent is a little bit different what they look for me, it's really the writing. Like, the writing has to be really, really good, which again is very subjective, but I can fix character arcs. I can fix, you know, endings that fall a little flat. I can fix, you know, anything else that kind of back what needs to be fixed. I can't help someone get their writing craft-wise to a place where it needs to be. That's like the work the writer has to do on their own. And it's work that I think every writer is always doing. So for me, it is voice and writing that really grabbed me. And of course, followed closely by character. Sometimes I just know the premise is really fresh and really interesting. One of my authors did a really great YA novel about this girl who does a deep sea diving business with her mother. Her father's been recently incarcerated, and a whole expedition goes terribly wrong, and she and some other acquaintances, future acquaintances, wind up on this deserted island after this like thing from the depths like capsizes their boat, and they have to get off the island, and the island has this time warp around it. And I was just like, I've never anything like this before. Like, I have to take this on. This is amazing. And obviously the writing was great. The characters were great. It was a really interesting premise, really great hook. And so that, you know, those kinds of things. And I think also the market, right? Like memoir right now is super, super tough. So I'm taking on very few memoirs because they either have to have this incredible, incredible following, or be a really well-known voice in the space, or the writing has to just be like drop dead incredible. And so, yeah, for nonfiction, it's a little bit of a different game. A lot of nonfiction, I'm hunting people out. I'm looking on websites and you know, outlets for people who are writing and topics I'm interested in. But I do get some nonfiction through Slush, certainly. So, yeah, and with nonfiction, it is so much more a consideration of, like, who's the audience for this? What's the market like? What does our platform look like? Is it robust enough and editors will sort of take notice? What's the writing like, et cetera.
Yeah, it's interesting, and this shouldn't really come as a surprise, but as you're talking about the fiction books and what makes you gravitate toward them, I mean, it's obvious in some ways, but it's like, oh, it's exactly what I would think of as a reader, like what, you know, what pulls me in. And I think I sometimes think like the agent maybe just has the business hat on, and I'm sure you do, but it, I guess it is also just about what draws you in and what characters are you really compelled by and what writing do you find beautiful and, you know, what book can you not put down? So
I was, if an author can make me forget the business side for a little bit, they've got me, you know, like even if I'm thinking about edits in the back of my mind, if I can put those aside long enough because I'm just so like entranced in the world they've created for me, that's a really good sign.
Well, I'm always just interested in sort of bookish jobs and how people have made their way there. Are you someone who was always a big reader and sort of knew you wanted to do something with books, or how did you come into come to being an agent?
Yeah, I think my story sounds very familiar. Like, I've always had a huge love of books. I have pictures of me being like, you know, two and like flipping pages. Like, couldn't read them, but was very interested in the actual books. And when I was younger, I thought I was going to be a writer. And that took like many different forms of like being a fiction writer and then doing poetry. And then I was like, this is too much. Like, oh man, writing's hard. So when I went to college, I took my degree in creative writing, and I knew that I needed a job that, you know, paid money. I thought about going to my MFA, changed my mind on that. Didn't have a really compelling reason to go. I didn't feel driven to write in some of the ways that my peers did. Didn't feel like a good enough excuse to spend a lot of money on an MFA. And so I knew I needed some kind of job. And I knew I loved books. I knew I didn't want to teach. I knew I didn't want to... you know, necessarily do other sort of English major adjacent jobs. So I started looking at publishing, which felt kind of logical. And luckily for me, an alumnus of my college hooked me up with a friend of hers who was an agent at Curtis Brand at the time. And she told me all about agenting. It was sort of like an informational interview. And I thought, wow, that sounds really cool. How neat. Before I'd really been considering like editorial internships, stuff like that. So I applied to a bunch of internships my junior summer, so like coming out of my junior year of college, and applied to both publishing house internships, some scouting firms, and some agencies. And I was lucky enough to land at Distill for my internship and spent the summer there in New York, and it was wonderful. And I really fell in love with the job and the people, and thought when I left, wow, it would be really great if I could come back to New York and work with them like for real. But I knew also that, you know, agencies are small. They're usually small businesses. They don't hire very often. Everyone at Distill felt very stable and set in their jobs. So I was like, well, maybe a different agency or maybe a publishing house, and I'll try to get there eventually. And I graduated, moved back to New York with my boyfriend, now fiance. And I was like, I'm still poor and broke and want a job. So I kind of like hung around the agency and like did some free reading. And eventually a job opened up and they said, hey, you've been hanging around for a few months. Like, do you want to come in and interview for it? And I said, yes, of course. And came in. So I actually started at Distill as the financials and sub rights assistant. And very quickly, everyone was like, yeah, she can't work with the money. That's a bad idea. and my boss's assistant at the time left to pursue new opportunities. And so she asked me to be her assistant. And that was probably one of the greatest things that's happened to me, because I assist Jane Distill at the moment still. And she, you know, she's the head honcho. And so I got to learn everything from her and see how she did everything. And it was probably like the most informative experience. Like, it just, you know, learning through osmosis, basically. And so that, I think,
that's so cool.
Helped me be the agent that I am today and continuing to grow, obviously, and learn. But that was like a great like foundation for starting to
agent.
I couldn't have asked for a better mentor, for a better way of seeing how to do things. You know, she's been in the industry in various forms for most of her life. And, you know, is a fantastic resource. So I had a really strong start and a really strong foundation there, which was wonderful. So that's how I got into agent.
That's very cool. And I love that you just sort of were like, I'm just going to hang around there and see what happens. And it worked out. I mean, just putting yourself out there. And I'm sure working with her was, you know, and is like a masterclass in, you know, being an agent. So that's
every
very
day.
Cool. Yeah. Well, you know, that makes me wonder too, what do you think surprised you the most about the publishing process from the agent side, as you were kind of coming up?
I don't think I knew how much time I would spend being sort of a counselor in like the best way possible. Like, I knew this was gonna be a really people focused job, which is why I wanted it. I love making connections. I love talking to people. I love kind of helping to edit and guide. But I didn't, as I've gotten, more clients and sold more projects, you know, so much of my day is spent, as an editor's day is often, facilitating conversations, having conversations with authors, trying to troubleshoot. Like, a lot of my job is like fact finder and like detective and troubleshooter. And that part kind of surprised me. And I think also what surprised me was how much of my day really isn't spent reading. You know, I went into the same kind of conception of like, I'll just be reading slush all day. And that does not happen at all. And I think the other thing is just like how much different stuff that we do. Like, I mean, I started with contracts and I was like, oh my God, I've never vetted a contract. Like, I'm no lawyer. And my boss said, all right, well, here's your precedent agreement. Here's a contract that we have established with this publisher. You take a look at that. You take a look at yours. See what's different. Come back to me. We'll talk about it. I said, okay. you know, and I got, you know, a checklist of other things to look for. But, you know, like, I was like, oh my gosh, I've never done that before. And I think the other thing that's amazing is, like, in terms of job growth, like, every time I've hit one milestone, another one's cropped up where it's like, well, I've never had this situation happen before. And I think the benefit of being in an agency is, the size of mine is like you have people to ask questions and we're very collaborative and supportive. But yeah, I did sort of a preempt deal a couple of weeks ago and I was like, I've never done preempt before. What's this? I've been doing this for 5 years. What's this? And yeah, I think the thing that I kind of knew but didn't really know until I started was like how different every day is. It always keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, it sounds exciting. What would you say are some of the authors or projects that you, well, I'm sure you're passionate about all of them because you represented them all, but could you tell us about a few of the projects that you've been really excited to work on and either ones that are in the works or maybe any that have come out?
Yeah, so one project that I'm super excited about is coming out next Tuesday, actually, and really, really exciting, but it's called The Last Story of Nina Lee by Nancy Ju-Yun Kim, and it is about this mother and daughter in Koreatown in L.A., and the daughter has since left home, but she returns to her mother's Koreatown apartment on a visit and finds her mother dead in the apartment. And starts this whole dive into, you know, who her mother was, what happened. And the other point of view is from her mother in her first years in America. And it's so beautiful. I'm Korean by birth. I was adopted. And something about the stories really touched me. I love mother-daughter stories. I love kind of family secrets. And I love sort of the experience that Nancy captures in this novel. It's beautiful. It's sad. It's really poignant. And, you know, it was one of those books that I knew kind of from the beginning. I was like, oh, this is going to be something. And so I'm so excited it's coming out next week. I'm so, so excited.
That sounds fantastic. And I'll say, too, by the time this airs, it'll definitely be out. So people should, I know I'm going to get my library holds and my book orders in. That one sounds really great.
Yeah. And then in a similar vein, I have an author named June Her, who's done, she has one book out, has another one coming out next year, and the third under contract, which is very exciting. But she does young adult historical mysteries set in Korea. And this is kind of another situation where I've never seen I love historical fiction, but I've never seen much historical fiction in the YA space set in not like a Western world. And I was fascinated. I was like, huh. Like 1800s Korea, what does that look like? And June does a really marvelous job bringing that to life. Like her first book is called The Silence of Bones. It came out in April amid COVID. God bless her. It's really wonderful. But it's about this young woman who is apprenticed to the police bureau in 1800s Korea. And she has to help the chief police investigator investigate a string of murders that have been happening in the capital. And, you know, her discoveries are twists and turns abound. But there's also, you know, a strong family element woven through it. And, you know, it's set in Korea during a really interesting time in their history. And then, let me see, has there anything in nonfiction? I don't know. I have like a lot of like really fun things in the works.
Well, those both sound really good. That second one I'm going to have to check out too. And you brought up it came out during
COVID,
we're still in COVID.
But three books come out at the height of the pandemic. I had two YA projects and a nonfiction project come out, and it was like, oh my God.
It's so stressful. And I feel like, well, and you can tell me, but I feel like maybe now that, you know, a lot of libraries and bookstores are open for curbside and there's a lot of virtual events. Like, do you think from your perspective, like things are getting better for books to come out, or is it still a real struggle?
You know, it's hard to say a little bit, just I'm not on that like kind of like inner workings side of the people who like really get the books like out and like in on the shelves. I think, you know,
I just mean like for the book to be able to kind of do well right now, or is it
March and April were so hard because it was like everyone sort of scrambling to adjust. And I think everyone's focus was like everywhere. I think at this point, you know, hopefully a lot of us have settled into some sort of routine at this point. And, you know, there's a little bit more attention span and focus happening. I think also publicists and marketers have been able to shift their own procedures and like get books in front of people again, in a way that was like really difficult when COVID first started. So I think we're sort of adjusting. I think some of us are wondering, you know, well, is this all going to be for nothing because we're going to go back to the office at some point. So all of our remote systems will be defunct. But I think it's a better time to be releasing books now. And of course, I mean, I guess the other thing though is like we're heading into election season. So we don't really know how that will impact people picking up books.
Yeah. And I know, I feel like at least in sort of the library space, I feel like we have a better handle now on, you know, getting authors in to do, we're not in, yeah, getting them virtually to virtually present and things like that. And so, yeah, that must help. And I feel like we've just gotten maybe a little bit more creative with just what you're saying, like how to help people find books to read and what to buy. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, you know, I was also sort of wondering too, I know this is sort of a strange season to be working on books, but are you seeing any particular like trends or, you know, anything particularly popular in any of your categories? Just sort of, I guess, sort of just like a window into kind of what you're seeing right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's anything in terms of a trend. I mean, there's definitely been an uptick in queries. I think, you know, everyone's got a little bit more time these days. Which might end when kids go back to school. I don't know. But everyone's got a little bit more time these days. We've definitely seen an uptick in queries. There was like a handful of pandemic novels that I saw being kind of queried, and I was like, not the time. for me personally, I mean, I think some people are very eager to read those to sort of like find some solace in the story. I was like, I can't, like, not for me.
No, I don't think I could do that right now.
but yeah, I think generally people are looking for sort of escapist literature. So I've seen a good amount of thrillers. I've seen a good amount of, you know, romances, stuff like that.
Been in that category.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think I've been in that category a lot lately. I feel like I'm bouncing back and forth between like escapist romance and then, but also like, you know, just given everything going on, more heavier things like so many of the books that are sold out of the, you know, different anti-racist books and things. So it's an interesting time to be a reader. And actually that was going to be one of my questions for you too. I know you read so much for your job and for the authors that you represent. Is there anything you've just been reading for fun lately that you'd want to recommend to listeners?
Yeah. So I did just go, on vacation, but I had time to read, which was so exciting. I mean, I always have time to read, but you know, extra time to read. The long list. So the book that I read that like really blew me away recently was Carmen Maria Machado's In the Dream House. And it's amazing. It's a memoir. And it's about, she sort of unpacks this idea, not the idea, but just the dynamics of abuse in queer relationships and kind of through the lens of her own previous relationship. And it's a little scholarly, but in an amazing way. The structure is so unique. I mean, she's a master class in creative writing. The structure would seem wonky if it wasn't so tightly controlled. Like, it's really gorgeous. And like, I borrowed it from a friend. Like, I need to go buy it because I like want it on my shelf to like, reference. It's so, so good. I also really love...
I'm going to have to check that out. She did one of the essays in March Sisters on Life, Death, and Little Women. I loved her writing. And I haven't read any of her other books or anything. So she's kind of been on my list of authors to try.
Her short story collection is also so good.
I'm going to add that to my list.
She's amazing. I also really loved Evie Drake Starts Over by Linda Holmes, which being like, it was like a quick like read, and like it's like it's so easy to read, but it would like have like these hidden depths to it, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like it felt a little bit like Eleanor Oliphant to me in that kind of like surprising, great commercial way, but also like wasn't just fluffy, you know, it had like a lot of heart to it.
Yes, I just adored that one. My son was born last year. I used that as my book to sort of like make me be okay with being up in the middle of the night for feedings, because I would sit there and I'd have Evie Drake on my Kindle, and I don't know, it just was so heartwarming, and loved the writing, and I hope that there is either a sequel or another book in that vein from her coming out sometime soon, because I loved it so much.
And I have one poetry recommendation if any of your listeners are poetry people, and this is a little bit biased because she's one of my friends, but she's very talented in her own right, and her debut poetry collection came out also I think during COVID actually, but it's gotten some really nice reviews, and but it's called Hot with the Bad Things by Lucia Lotempio. The collection just is masterful in the way it kind of pushes us and challenges us as readers, and reflects on women's bodies, you know, in the world and how they are, and kind of the relationships we enter into.
I'll make sure to link to all of those if people want to check them out. And, you know, I guess just to end, I feel like, you know, there are, myself included, lots of probably aspiring writers listening, and just you have, I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but just any last parting words of wisdom or encouragement for aspiring writers right now, trying to, you know, soldier on and get the work done and keep going.
I think I would say right now, you know, well, two things. One is that similar to what my boss is about editors, picking up books, you know, it's similar to agents. All you need is one. You just need one person to really fall in love with your work and to be the right person for it. And, you know, just because one agent offers doesn't mean you just necessarily take it if you don't feel good about them and haven't vetted them. But you need one person to really get your book and to really believe in it. It's great if you have multiple offers, but it doesn't happen for every book or every author, and that's fine. You know, if you feel good in your choice, great, like, go with it. But also I think right now, especially more than ever, I think we're seeing the community of writers is so important. And so if you don't have one, it might be a really great time to try to cultivate one. There's a lot of resources on the internet. Twitter can be toxic, but it can also be a great way to find other like-minded people. This podcast is a great way, you know, of like a community of writers and readers, I'm sure. But I mean, the community is so important for not just support and encouragement, but also for, you know, craft advice, for extra eyes in a manuscript, for more objective opinions, stuff like that. And, you know, keep reading. I think one of the best ways to be a really good writer is to read books in the vein that you're writing in. You will, I think, be surprised by how much you've learned through osmosis. I learn new things from books every day in terms of how they're structured and how they're told. And I'm not even a writer. So definitely do a lot of reading, you know, in the genre that you're working in, and do recent reading. Read things that have come out in that year or the last 2 years or last 3 years.
I think that is such wonderful advice. Thank you for that and for sort of providing a window for us into the role of an agent and sharing some of the books on your list. It's just been really wonderful to get to chat with you. And if people want to connect with you online or submit to you, where should they head?
Yeah, so online, you can find me on the website, which is www.distil.com. There's like a meet our agent section and my info is there. My email is abishop@distil.com. Also on the website if you need it. And then I'm on Twitter at Amy Liz Bishop. So those are some of the ways you can find me.
Wonderful. And along with that, is there anything on sort of your particular wish list right now that you're looking for? If maybe a writer is listening that might have, you know, your next book that you're going to be passionate about?
Yeah. So I've been really hunting for some really good literary assistance, sort of in the vein of Hannah Tinsey's The 12 Lives of Samuel Hawley. Something with kind of a slow burn. I love a good murder. I'm not so good at like the fast paced thrillers of like, you know, the police procedurals or the, military thrillers, but I love a good, like kind of creepy slow burn suspense. And if anyone has a YA thriller like Sadie by Courtney Summers, I am all ears. So those are some things I'm definitely looking for.
Well, Amy Bishop, thank you so much for coming on. And best of luck with all the projects you have in the works. And I hope to see you sometime soon at Muse in the Marketplace. We'll cross our fingers for 2021.
Thank you so much for having me on. This is really wonderful, and I appreciate the opportunity.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. And there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores. So it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome. And you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.